The gospel lesson this morning is from the gospel according to St. Luke. The story picks up after the episode where Jesus has encountered two persons traveling on the road to Emmaus, and they are discussing with him the things that have transpired in Jerusalem. And they don't seem to recognize Jesus, but he is made known to them in the breaking of the bread. And Luke writes, Jesus himself stood among the disciples and said to them, "Peace be with you." They were startled and terrified and thought that they were seeing a ghost. He said to them, "Why are you frightened? And why do doubts arise in your hearts? Look at my hands and my feet. See that it is I myself. Touch me and see, for a ghost does not have flesh and bones as you see that I have." And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. While in their joy they were disbelieving and still wondering, he said to them, "Have you anything here to eat?" They gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate in their presence. Then he said to them, "These are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms must be fulfilled." Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. And he said to them, "Thus it is written that the Messiah is to suffer and to die and arise from the dead on the third day, and that repentance and forgiveness of sins is to be proclaimed in his name to all the nations, beginning from Jerusalem. You are witnesses of these things." This too is for us the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Some preachers may want to cover up this fact, but it is true that all of the resurrection stories that we find in the four Gospels are pervaded by doubts. In their own ways, Matthew, Mark, and John all insist that the disciples doubted when they heard reports that Jesus had been raised from the dead. And Luke is no different in this regard. Up to this point in the story that Luke is telling us, Jesus has appeared only to two travelers who are making their way to the little village of Emmaus. And apart from this one appearance, there has only been the report of some women who went to Jesus' tomb only to find that tomb empty. A report that seemed to those who heard it like an idle tale, a story that they didn't believe. Reports of a resurrected Jesus' sightings, if you will, seemed as reliable and believable to those first disciples as stories about UFOs or the Loch Ness Monster seem reliable and believable to us. The empty tomb, the vacated grave clothes were about as good an evidence as grainy photographs of flashing lights and formless monsters in some Scottish lake, as far as hard evidence is concerned. And now these two travelers on that road to Emmaus claimed that they had not only walked with Jesus and talked with Jesus, but that they had even shared dinner with him. "The Lord has risen indeed," they said, "and he has appeared to Simon," which was just as unverifiable a report as reports of the abominable snowman. But now Jesus himself stood among his disciples, his very presence the proof that he was, in fact, alive. He stood there on his own two nail-scarred feet and spoke to them in the same voice that had taught them in parables. And Jesus said to them what he had said 1,000 times to his disciples, "Peace be with you." And in saying that, Jesus gave to his disciples what they needed most. He gave them peace of mind, for they were anxious and afraid, they were uncertain and unsure. They still could not quite believe that Jesus was alive. They had heard rumors, they had heard reports There was whispering, there was speculation. People had shared incredible stories that seemed like fairy tales or make-believe. Until now, however, there had been no solid evidence that proved Jesus was alive, no way to prove that Jesus was alive. Now, however, standing before them was all the proof they needed. Jesus stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." And the peace he bestows again, friends, is peace of mind. There's no need to be anxious. There's no cause to be afraid. "I am here," Jesus tells them. "I am with you. I have come back for you. I have returned to be with you. I am alive and all is well." Only Jesus' appearance, Jesus' presence with his disciples doesn't bring peace of mind. Instead, it produces quite the opposite effect. Like the women at the tomb, the disciples are startled, they're terrified. Resurrection is not good news, at least not right at first. Resurrection is instead frightening, even scary. It's startling because resurrection is unexpected. It's scary because all the rules no longer apply. Dead men don't wear plaid, and neither do they come back to life. The only way the dead come back to life is as zombies or as ghosts, the undead who stalk the night and haunt our dreams. They are the darker side of fairy tales and make-believe. Now, apparently, this figure is recognizable as Jesus, but the disciples don't believe it is Jesus himself. How can it be? They had seen him publicly executed. They had watched as he was buried. Everything in their experience told them that Jesus was dead and gone. So whatever they were seeing and hearing may have looked and sounded like Jesus, but it couldn't be Jesus because he was dead. And the dead do not return to life. By definition, they can't. What they were seeing must be a ghost, they said to themselves. That was the most reasonable explanation, however unlikely that itself might have been. And as Sharon Ring points out, ghosts or hallucinations are explanations more readily accepted than resurrection. We have such a hard time with resurrection because resurrection is an entirely new category of existence. It's something we can't explain scientifically. It's not something we can map out on an actuarial table. It's not something we can govern according to the normal human laws. Of course, it's going to be met initially with skepticism and wonder and not a little doubt. It's entirely natural that the disciples met Jesus' resurrection with joy. Of course, they were glad to see him again. But what did it mean? How could it be? It's entirely natural that they had questions, that in their joy they were also disbelieving and still wondering. And if it's natural for them to wonder and question, then it's perfectly natural for us. Only here's the point at which so many people experience anxiety. People like you and me have questions, honest questions about resurrection. What it's like, and how it happens, and whether it involved Jesus' physical body. But our anxiety raises because faith is so often presented to us as certainty, as never having doubts. Raising questions is so often seen as the cardinal sin. If you don't understand something, we're often told, you merely have to accept on faith. No questions asked. In this particular construction of Christianity, doubt is the opposite of faith. But friends, I want to say to you this morning that doubt and faith are not opposites. As Michael Jenkins says, belief, and doubt are intimately related responses to those who are actually paying attention to the amazing acts of God. Faith and doubt are two sides of the same coin, and if you've been paying attention, you know that God doesn't always play by the rules. The resurrection of Jesus is exhibit A, and everything else in life and faith hangs on that. Now, to be frank, resurrection is not the natural order of things, not like the way flowers bloom in the spring. In resurrection is something entirely new and wholly unprecedented. Nothing like it has ever taken place before. So I think it's entirely unsurprising that the disciples are frightened when they see Jesus. It's understandable that doubts arise in their hearts, but why? Why are they and why are we afraid? Why do they and why do we doubt? Well, I think we doubt for very good reasons. If resurrection means that God is faithful to God's promises, we doubt because we have experience of people who are not faithful to their promises. Whether it's a promise to call or to write or to visit, whether that promise is to pray for someone in need, or whether that promise is to be faithful and forsake all others as long as we both shall live. We're afraid because we think our past means that we aren't good enough for God. We're afraid because our past means that we can't imagine living a different future. Or we're afraid because we think we have it so good now that we can't possibly imagine that things might get even better. Resurrection means that the future is open, that there are entirely new possibilities that we could never have dreamed of. And still we doubt because, well, because we think logically. Our life is governed by reason, and what reason dictates might be possible. We doubt because we weigh the evidence very carefully and think about what must be the case. But resurrection defies reason. Resurrection goes beyond our experience. Resurrection upsets any careful weighing of the evidence. Jesus comes to us and offers us the most compelling evidence possible. Jesus offers to his disciples his own resurrected body. He offers it to be seen and to be touched, to be taken hold of, to be manipulated, to be analyzed and scrutinized. And any way you look at it, the inescapable conclusion is that Jesus, who was crucified, has been raised from the dead. The inescapable conclusion is that this is Jesus, for he offers to us his hands, which were pierced by nails. He says, "Come, touch, and see that it is me." "Look," Jesus says, "see me. Touch me. Know that it is I myself. Know that I have come back to be with you in love." And that, friends, is very important, because Jesus does not withhold himself from his disciples, nor does Jesus scorn their doubt. Jesus doesn't punish them for having questions. Jesus does not chide them for needing to see his wounded body. He accommodates his disciples' fear. He doesn't punish them or condemn them for it. Last week, Jesus said to Thomas, "Blessed are those who have believed without seeing." But I think it's equally true that those who have believed because they have seen are blessed as well. For Jesus reveals himself also to those who doubt. Jesus comes to those who question. Jesus appears to those who hesitate. Jesus makes himself available for those who are reluctant to believe, to those who need proof. Jesus reveals himself to all people such that they might come to faith, even a faith that is a mixture of wonder and doubt and amazement and questions. Jesus actually welcomes our questions. Because the Jesus who offered himself for closer inspection also said, "Ask, and it will be given to you. Search, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened unto you." When it comes to the resurrection, we say, "Prove it." And Jesus, in love, will. Thanks be to God that we can bring our doubt and questions in faith to God. Amen.